This is Greater LA, the show that connects you to the people, places, and apartments of Southern California. I'm Janaea Williams in for Steve Chiatakis. LA's housing department says it's now time to wind down COVID-era protections for tenants. Now the city council has to decide, starting in the new year, should landlords be able to evict tenants who can't pay their rent for COVID-related reasons? And what about paying back all that past due rent? This is at a time of high inflation in a city and county where many people are already struggling to put food on the table and pay some of the highest rents in the country. And all of that is happening in a county where some 60,000 people don't have a home at all. Liam Dillon is a staff writer at the LA Times, where he covers housing affordability, and he joins us now. Hey, Liam.
Hi.
So tell us about this new proposal that the LA City Council is considering that would reverse the tenant protections that were put in place in the early stages of the pandemic in 2020.
Yeah, that's right. Starting in spring 2020, March 2020, when the pandemic was started bearing down on the world and Southern California, there were a number of protections that were put into place aiming to prevent evictions and also to prevent folks from seeing rent increases. There was a deep fear of sort of a wave of homelessness that would occur. But now, you know, more than 2.5 years on, the city is saying, well, you know, it's time we should think about winding down some of these proposals.
Several Southern California cities have implemented rent control in the past year.
Right.
And some other cities have put some measures on the November ballot considering implementing rent control of their own. But that's kind of aggravated landlords and building owners in those cities. So what are some of the arguments for and against rent control as a way to improve affordability?
So I think the strongest arguments in favor of rent control are that it prohibits and large rent increases and is an attempt to sort of keep pace with what people's economic situations are. That being said, you know, you poll economists and, you know, to a person, many of them will say this is not the way you ultimately alleviate housing affordability issues. You need to do that by building a lot more housing and having it available to people of lower incomes or providing vouchers and things like that. Because without that new supply, then, you know, you have situations where, you know, folks get locked into their homes and then can't get out because it's too expensive to do it. And so, you know, that affects landlords and it affects tenants ultimately as well.
Right. And when you talk about landlords, there are two different types, right? There are big companies and then there are smaller owners who might just have one or two properties.
Right.
Are the problems the same for the big and the little guys?
You know, it really depends on the circumstances. I mean, you know, there was a big effort at the state level to provide rental assistance to tenants who were behind on their rent. And in fact, you know, in just in LA City, $1.5 billion was given out primarily to those who are considered extremely low income. So these are the families of four making less than $35,000 a year or an equivalent amount. And so, you know, that money was available sort of to all, but it was in many cases, what we found from our reporting, difficult to access. And so if you have a corporate landlord who can better navigate the system, you know, that allowed for both the landlord and the tenant to be made whole. But at the same time, you have, you know, as you said, mom and pop landlords who may be relying on, you know, their apartment investment in their retirement or things of that nature. And so if it was harder for them to access that money, then that makes it harder for their tenants as well. And so I think it's really circumstantial here.
Right. And some cities like Santa Monica are now having big rent hikes and housing prices across LA County are up. So what have you heard from tenants who are struggling with those new numbers?
That they're struggling. I mean, you know, I mean, just that, you know, as it relates to rents, particularly at the higher end of the market, there was a big decline right at the beginning of the pandemic. You know, you heard a lot about people fleeing from cities and urban areas to try to get more space in suburbs. But those days were short-lived and they're certainly over. You know, if you look at what apartment prices have done in the city of Los Angeles, the median two-bedroom, a newly leased one, goes for about $2,200 a month. And that's nearly 10% higher than what it was in March 2020. And so even though there was that decline, these numbers are back and obviously making it harder for tenants, particularly at a time of rising inflation.
So, Liam, we've been talking about the housing crisis for a while now, and certainly during the pandemic, we talked about it even more because it was an emergency. A lot of people lost their jobs and they couldn't pay rent at all. So do you feel like we're at an inflection point, though? Like, why is this moment interesting or different than what we've been talking about for at least the past 2.5 years?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. I'm often asked, are we at an inflection point? And I always want to say yes, because it's tough to imagine how much worse things can be, right? But at the same time, I mean, it's tough to see how the fundamentals really have changed. I mean, you know, housing production in the state writ large has really not increased significantly in the last few years. And again, sort of most experts say that having a robust amount of new building is, you know, ultimately the way out. And even that takes a long time to happen. And so these underlying dynamics, you know, now with increased inflation affecting everybody's bills, both landlords and tenants alike, I mean, it's tough to see the way out or the light at the end of the tunnel here. You can only really you know, envision, at least for the foreseeable future, things continuing on the path that they're on now.
Liam Dillon is a staff writer at the LA Times, where he covers housing affordability. Liam, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And now we're going to turn to two people on the front lines of this issue. Renee Christian Moya is an organizer with the Debt Collective and the LA Tenants Union. Hey, Renee.
How's it going?
And Matt Williams is the owner and operator at Williams Real Estate Advisors, where he specializes in mom and pop properties. Hey, Matt.
Hello.
So, Renee, I'm going to start with you. As we've been talking about, LA is considering repealing some of the tenant protections that were put in place at the start of the pandemic. I wonder how you feel about the news.
Well, we find it unfortunate. We know and have experienced a surge of evictions in LA County. By some measures, we believe that the evictions are already at the level that they were pre-pandemic and likely to go higher. That is with the existing protections in place right now. And, you know, I'm fielding tenant phone calls on a day-to-day basis, hearing the desperation in the voices of a lot of these tenants. So it's looking a little bit grim out there.
And Matt, how about you? For people who own rental properties, what's the impact of these protections expiring?
It's the ability for owners to be able to start paying to repair things at the property, to cover their debt services, to not have to come out of pocket.
And how many units do you manage? And you own some yourself, right?
I do. I manage 900 plus, but I do have two buildings I own on my own. I would say post-pandemic or coming out, we're less than 1% eviction rate, which is really, really good. That's always been our eviction rate across our portfolio. Mom and pops are not in the eviction business.
So you haven't increased evictions, but has anything changed with your tenants during the pandemic? Have you had specific issues, or do you have any tenants that fell behind on rent?
We do. We did. It was very interesting. Tenants that really needed the help were very thankful for the help, and we worked with them through and through. Tenants that could afford to pay their rent were the ones that were calling, yelling at my staff, demanding discounts. And all our owners, because a lot of our mom and pops care about the tenants, they don't want to evict. They care about their elderly tenants. It was very tough. It was very tough, the abuse we took from tenants who could pay but were just using the system to get no rent paid.
Renee, what are you hearing from tenants?
Well, we're hearing something very different, frankly, from different sized landlords at that as well. In our experience and the experience of tenant organizers who have been working with tenants on a day-to-day basis for the entirety of the pandemic, what we actually saw was a lot of small mom-and-pop landlords were often engaging in illegal lockouts. And so what we're seeing across the county, frankly, whether in luxury units and or in you know, poorer, older units, we are seeing a lot of abuse, frankly, throughout the city. And it seems to me that right now is not the moment to take away these temporary protections. In fact, if anything, it is now time for the city council and, of course, the county as well to adopt policies that are permanent, right? We want and need permanent just cause protections for all tenants in LA. And we also need a right to counsel so that tenants can actually get to eviction court with a lawyer. And finally, we need the anti-harassment ordinance in LA City to have some teeth put into it so that city officials can actually enforce it and stop the kind of abuse that we're unfortunately seeing right now.
And then, Matt, when you hear stories about people who are struggling with finances, maybe because inflation is so high and pay hasn't kept up with that, or maybe people are dealing with health issues because of COVID, does it ever give you pause about raising the rent?
So the best way to answer this is with increase in minimum wage, increase in expenses, increase in gas, What ends up happening is the cost to replace a water heater goes from $900 or $800 to $1,100. The cost to snake a toilet goes from $65 to $93. And so the owners, to provide the same quality of service with inflation, have to increase the rent, and our landlords haven't been able to increase the rent in 2 years. And I do want to mention that landlords were not subsidized. Tenants were subsidized so that they would not be evicted. Tenants who could not pay their rent due to impact of COVID had funds, and those funds were provided by, on a tenant basis. Landlords couldn't get that money unless a tenant applied. And if a tenant didn't apply, which we had people with $20,000 debts, didn't apply, and they just skipped out. And I would say that the government has actually been more proactive with tenants than they've been with landlords. And the problem we're running into is monies were only allocated through March 31st. These eviction moratoriums have no way for landlords to recoup their money. And landlords were on the front lines of this COVID problem when they deferred payments with no interest, no nothing. They had to carry the cost themselves for almost 2.5 years. And now with City of LA's extension of the eviction moratorium, tenants are now incurring debts that the federal government won't reimburse. So it puts tenants into a very tough situation. They have to pay that back under the state law by August 31st, 2023. And the longer City of LA holds it out, now landlords are stuck without any reimbursement. And now our landlords are going to be stuck with $10,000-$20,000 with nobody willing to pay. The tenants have nobody that's going to reimburse that. And because of bad government policy, the government has now put Renee and property owners, tenants union, and ourselves in an adverse situation. We don't want to evict, but if we can't get the rent, what's our solution? Evictions are only choice. A vacant unit is better than a unit with a tenant that isn't paying, because I have to still pay water, but I'm not getting my rent, so I can't pay my water bill. I still have to pay my mortgage, but I'm not getting my rent, so I can't pay my mortgage. And mom and pops, they pull from their personal paycheck. They work 60 hours, 40, 60 hours a week, and they have to pull from their paycheck to do that. When we talk about these issues, mom and pops make less than their tenants sometimes in these small buildings. So it's very tough for our clients with the extended moratoriums.
So let me ask you this. We just spoke with Liam Dillon, who's the LA Times reporter on housing and housing affordability. And he said that a lot of this assistance was very hard to get for tenants, a lot of the government assistance. So it's interesting, and I wonder, Renee, what you think about the idea that it is the fault of the government and these programs that have put everyone in an untenable position.
Well, we should be clear. The rental relief fund was extremely generous to landlords. After it was modified at some point in the previous 12 months, the rental assistance fund actually was able to provide up to 100% of back due payment for rent that was owed to tenants. And in fact, the law also made it easier so that landlords themselves could apply for the rental assistance from the very beginning. As opposed to tenants who, in the initial stages of the rental relief fund, had to get the consent of the landlord to apply for that rental assistance. And again, from the very beginning, despite the fact that we, advocates and organizers and tenants themselves, told the state that having an onerous application process to put the work effectively on the tenant to be able to apply was going to backfire. And in the initial stages of that application process, it absolutely did. Even now, billions of dollars have not reached the hands of tenants after and now in the second half of the year, putting a lot of those tenants in the line of fire for evictions because of the failures of the state. The point, of course, though, is that ultimately the lives of a lot of tenants are on the line in ways that it is not, absolutely not the case for a lot of the landlords in the city and county of Los Angeles. Number one, we know that the corporate concentration of property in the city and county of LA has only gotten worse with time. That means that the, much touted small mom and pop landlords are increasingly competing against these much larger corporate landlords who have made a killing during this entire pandemic. For the rest of tenants, however, for those tenants who have not been able to pay their rent, who are facing harassment, oftentimes despite the fact that they have paid their rent and/or received money from the rental assistance fund to do so, a lot of those tenants are getting harassed out, and they're facing probably the worst rental market that this city, which already had a housing and homelessness crisis, has confronted or have confronted in many, many, many years. Ultimately, if our city officials cared to do something about homelessness, they would stop the pipeline to homelessness. And the pipeline to homelessness starts with evictions. It starts with tenants getting priced out of their homes and out of their neighborhoods. It starts with landlord harassment of tenants. That is the actual crisis that we're confronting in the city and the county. And as long as we don't actually face up to that fact, and in fact, rush as quickly as possible to what we were doing in 2020 when we and 2019, when the homelessness crisis was already at an acute, horrible level, we're never going to get ahead of this crisis. And it's apparent to me that at the moment, our elected officials are not prioritizing that.
Renee Christian Moya is an organizer with the Debt Collective and the LA Tenants Union. And Matt Williams is the owner and operator at Williams Real Estate Advisors, where he specializes in mom and pop properties. Renee and Matt, thank you so much to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Coming up, if you ever find yourself wanting a hug or a snuggle or a cuddle, I think we all do every now and then, there's a service just for you, professional cuddle therapy. That's just ahead right after this short break.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Back now with more Greater LA. I'm Janaea Williams. Do you need a hug, a cuddle? A lot of people have felt disconnected and isolated during the pandemic. Too much screen time, too much Zoom. But how do you fix that issue? Would you pay someone to give you a hug or to cuddle with you? Because that is a thing. There are actually professional cuddlers and touch therapists out there. They offer their hourly services to help bring touch and connection back into people's lives. Trevor James is one of them. He's a professional cuddlist. Yep, that's what the official title is, cuddlist and touch therapist. Trevor, thank you so much for talking with me today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Wonderful. So maybe first off, let's talk a bit about touch. We know how important it is for newborns. There are full-time jobs making sure babies get the touch that they need in the hospital when they're first born. But what about adults? What can you tell me about what adults need?
Adults need touch and cuddling as well. It plays a very crucial factor in our well-being. Touch is a natural antidepressant, and it helps us with our immune system as well. There's so many benefits to touch, and there's no part of the body that does not benefit from touch.
Awesome. And can you maybe walk me through what a session looks like?
So a typical session begins with, you know, the little welcome and ice-breaking conversation, because let's face it, it's kind of difficult to cuddle with a total stranger.
Right.
So we have an ice-breaking conversation, discuss what's going to happen, and then we do some connection exercises. One of those would be like soul-gazing or eye-gazing. We do some breathing exercises, and then we go into the cuddling.
So who is your typical client? Is it a single person, someone going through a breakup? Is it a man, a woman?
Well, my clients are typically men. That's what I cater to. And just about anybody. I've got people who are widowers, people who've lost their partners and are feeling lonely. I've got people who are single who want touch, but they're not looking for sex. We've got people who are going through breakups. and need some affection. So there are all kinds of people who come, and there are people who come with some trauma and need help getting through that. And so I see quite a range of people.
And it strikes me that you say they're typically men. Why do you think men are so touch deprived in our society?
Well, there's several reasons. One of them is that touch is seen as something sexual. And so with things like homophobia and things like sexual harassment, men are less likely to want to touch people or to be touched by people.
And do you think that's an American thing? Because when I travel to other parts of the world, it's not uncommon to see men holding hands, walking down the street. And it's not they're not lovers. They're just friends holding hands, walking down the street. Do you think it's an American thing that men are afraid to touch one another?
Yes, it is an American thing. You're right. You'll find in other countries where they have like a high touch culture, people touch each other much more frequently. But in America, people are a lot more concerned about this personal space. And so people touch each other much less than in other cultures.
And is that something you've personally seen and observed when you travel or based on your personal knowledge? Tell me more
Absolutely.
About that.
Absolutely. So I grew up in Ghana. People touch each other much more frequently. It was very common to see two men holding hands, and they're not lovers and they're not gay.
So, Trevor, I'm really curious to know how you got into this in the first place. What gave you the idea to be a professional cuddlist?
I used to be an event producer and director, and my life was filled with traveling all around the country and in to different countries as well. And it was pretty stressful. And when I kind of retired from that industry, I decided I wanted to do something that was less stressful. And I came across an article about cuddle therapy. I was surprised that it was a thing at all. And I just figured this just might be a fit.
Trevor, this is really cool. What do you say at parties when people say, well, what do you do? What's the reaction when you say I'm a professional cuddlist?
Well, yes, you know, when I tell people touch and cuddle therapist, it's like, what was that again? So most people are surprised and curious. People want to find out, you know, what goes into all of this and how does a session go? What happens? And people always ask questions, yes.
So if someone finds themselves in need of a cuddle and wants to hire a professional cuddlist, how would they go about finding one?
The easiest way to find one would be to do a Google search for professional cuddlers. People can find me under my website, which is drcuddlesla.com.
Wonderful. Trevor James, professional cuddlist, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you so very much. Thank you for having me.
That's all we have time for today. Next week, the Metropolitan Water District says it has to fix a really big pipe in September. That's going to mean big cuts in outdoor water use. So does this spell death to every growing thing in Beverly Hills and Pasadena? And the latest homeless numbers will be coming out. We'll be reporting on those, too. And as always, you can listen to any and all of our stories at any time at our website, kcrw.com/greaterLA. You can also give us some feedback on the work we're doing and tell us about a great story we should be covering. And you can subscribe to the podcast, too. That's all at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Today's episode was brought to you by Jenna Cagle, Juliana Mayo, Sonia Geis, Phil Richards, Sue Margulies, Ray Guarna, Amy Ta, Christine Comito, Mike Vogel, and Christian Bordal. I'm Janaea Williams. Thank you so much for listening.